All right, let's go ahead and get started. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Stephanie Davis, and I cover CDK here at J.P. Morgan. With us from CDK, we have the whole team. We have Brian McDonald, the CEO, and Al Nitzel, the CFO, and Jen Gowman, the audience, the IR. We're going to continue our fireside chat format. We'll kick off with some questions, then we'll open it up to the audience. So to start out, Brian, could you give us a little bit of an introduction of the company for newcomers and an update on the business following your fiscal third quarter?
Sure. Thank you. So CDK is the leading automotive software company. We operate in over 100 countries. Our business, though, is primarily North American. Here in the United States, we have the predominant market share in the dealer management services area. The company was spun off from ADP just under 2 years ago. Was basically a part of ADP since its inception, and in the first year as a public company, CDK undertook a pretty comprehensive consulting review of its cost and the cost structure, and as part of that, announced a transformation plan. And the transformation plan basically has a target in fiscal year 2018 of increasing margins to EBITDA margins to 35%. The start of this journey, the company was at roughly 22%. So in the first year, which we'll be closing up on in this quarter, we've guided to about 350 basis points of EBITDA percentage improvement in the first year. So we're well on our way in the transformation and having pretty positive results thus far. Revenue continues to grow. EBITDA margins continue to grow. And so with that, we'll open it up for questions.
All right, well, I'll start. So this is a timely fireside chat, as you guys announced a reorg yesterday. Can you kind of tell us your thought process in the new structure and how this plays into the business transformation plan?
So we announced a major reorganization of the company yesterday. In large part, that's very customer-driven. We see from the customers a real need to bring together the assets that we have from the traditional dealer management system business. For lack of a better word, I'll call it a legacy business. And our digital assets. So 5 years ago, we bought a digital company called Cobalt, which does websites and other services around websites, whether that's search engine optimization, digital advertising, et cetera, reputation management, et cetera. And increasingly, we see our customers, dealers, wanting these assets more integrated. If you think about a world in the future where people start their buying experience online, which is what happens today, but also completing their purchase online. So we want to bring these assets closer together for the benefit of our customers. The fact of the matter also is that we have a pretty complicated organization. The company has done historically a lot of acquisitions, and we have a lot of legacy complexity. So, for example, we have in the current structure, which is changing July 1st, we have seven R&D organizations reporting to six different places. We have five sales organizations. So we have a lot of complexity, embedded complexity in the company for a lot of historical reasons and partly also because of the way we're organized. So by reorganizing the company allows us to service our customers better. Today, customers often get two different bills from us. They may have two different salespeople calling on them, and our products don't integrate that well across the suite that we have. And by changing our organization, we'll better facilitate our approach to customers. We'll also be able to improve our cost structure as a result of that. So pretty major reorganization for the company yesterday, and really one that will help us drive better customer experience as well as drive better product integration.
So in the press release, you said that this reorg was kind of included in the transformation plan and couldn't really be achieved without it. Now, it sounds like the seven R&D organizations, those five sales teams, those are part of it. Is there anything else that you can help kind of wrap our minds around how to do that?
Sure. So we'll have less executives as part of the reorganization. We'll have higher spans of control. We'll have a global R&D organization so we can leverage our global scale and you know, get cost savings around use of tools. And so today we often replicate the use of certain tools or processes at different places in the organization because we have multiple organizations doing the same thing. So global R&D is a big part of the reorganization. Global product management, a more effective sales structure. We'll also have less executives as part of the reorganization, and higher spans of control.
So does this reorg mean that you'll be able to increase your pace of margin expansion, or maybe even hit that target of 35% earlier than 2018?
Well, we have a target of 35% margin in 2018. I'd remind everybody that we started at roughly 22%, so it's a pretty big lift to take your margins from 22% to 35%. All the things that we're doing, including the reorg, are meant to get us there. And you know, today we're in the sort of 27 range, and so basically we're not changing our targets. Obviously, if we can do things faster, we'll do them. You know, today we're not formally changing our targets of getting to 35% in 2018. But we're moving as quickly as we can, and making a lot of changes and making very good progress. If you look at our you know, how we've guided this year we'll grow our EBITDA margins about 350 basis points, you know, which is a good step on the journey from going from 22 to 35.
So combining digital and Aarna, will there be any impact to your geographic footprint in the Northwest, or is that something that's not yet on the table? Because I know Cobalt is historically.
No, we plan to maintain a presence in Seattle, a significant presence in Seattle. We have you know, very talented people there, and we don't have any plans to make any change in the footprint there.
Okay. All right. And then looking at the KPIs, I know historically there's actually been a very low penetration of your digital solutions into your Aarna client base. How should we think about that going forward now that they're combined? Are we still going to get a website count, or is there going to be some sort of new metric to look at?
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at our earnings release a week or two ago, you'll see that we've been more transparent about the transformation program. Those of you that have come to one-on-ones with myself and Al, we'll see we're pretty transparent. So, you know, we're obviously changing our organization structure. But you know, our goal is not to make investors feel like we're making ourselves more opaque. We have a commitment to be transparent. That's my style, and so we'll continue to do that. So I think the number of key KPIs, like number of websites and those sorts of things, which help investors, you know, there's no plan to change those in the. In our reporting once we get the org up and running. And now, just to be clear, we'll report Q4, which is the quarter ending June 30th, exactly as we report today. And the first change in reporting structure that you will see, investors will see, will be for our first quarter, which ends September 30th.
Okay. Always like to make my life easier. So you're coming up in your first 6 months at CDK. Where do you see the biggest near-term and long-term opportunities at the company? And what benchmarks would you want to accomplish by your first year?
Well, I think we've, for me, I've already hit a couple of them. We made some very big improvements in our service levels, which we talked about in our investor call. We've had dramatic improvements in our service levels, over 80% in the first quarter, going into the second quarter. Today, our service response times are in the mid-90s relative to our targets for service levels. I also wanted to redesign the organization because I think, as I said, our organization was overly complex, and that drives a lot of complexity around our products, number of versions, et cetera, much of which we disclosed in our last earnings release as we laid out the transformation plan. So, you know, we've announced the organization yesterday. We have some more work to do to work through that in June, and it'll be up and running in July 1st. So those are those are some pretty big, pretty big proof points in my first few months. And we'll just continue to truck along and get the results.
All right. So walk me through your transformation plan. How should we think about the timeline considering the work streams that you introduced in the last quarter?
The transformation plan that was outlined in June of last year is really on track. What we communicated at the beginning of our fiscal year 16 was that we were, going to be deriving incremental benefits to the tune of around $45 million this year, meaning 16. We're in, as Brian said, our fourth quarter right now. On the call a couple weeks back, we communicated that the benefits of the transformation plan are going to be closer to $50 million. So we're getting some lift in terms of our ability to exceed the goals that we set for this year in 16. Our reorg that was done is really one of the key enablers to help us achieve the objectives and to give us more confidence that that can occur. And I think, we're going to continue to execute, and as we've committed, that we will continue to provide the kind of transparency against those work streams in terms of the progress we're making. They're not, some of them are, I don't want to say easy, but some of them can be achieved quicker than others. There's some key ones relative to the moving up work stream, as we talked about, that entail, a lot of heavy lifting because of the sheer number of versions of our software that we have. Communicated we have over 1,500 versions of software spread across around 70-plus products, and rationalizing that just takes some time. We know that once that, progress is being made, that our organization will continue to get more and more efficient. And, our plan is the 1,300 basis points of margin expansion. We've overcommitted against year one, and the exit rate for our fourth quarter of this year should give us a good stepping-off point for fiscal year 17, that when we layer on execution against additional programs, we feel that, the plan's really quite achievable.
So you touched on this, but what are really the nearest-term opportunities we can think about, and what's more long-term, like moving up?
There's a couple of the work streams, and it came up a little earlier about the Seattle operation. We're communicating the need to maintain certain presences in certain geographic locations, but those footprints will be smaller. And what we're doing in a very thoughtful way as we tool up resources in both our Cincy operation that was announced a while back, as well as leveraging offshore capabilities, is that we can't allow our service levels and other deliverables to diminish as we're working through the transition. So as we think about the workforce mobilization efforts, that's a program that takes time. We're seeing some really good benefits from that. We're also seeing some good benefits from some of the disciplines we put in place around pricing. That was an area, as we thought about, how we enabled or allowed, discount bands to swing more widely than we would have preferred, those have been tightened up dramatically, and we're seeing some lift come through from those levers as well. Some of the other programs that we've talked about, the number of systems that we have to get an order in the system to ultimately build through RFP to billing, those take a little time. And, we're going from 12 systems to a lot less in that order to cash process, and that one is going to take some effort to get through. So I think, we're on track to those programs that we can accelerate. We will. Our intention is to, to get, the benefits of the program realized as quickly as we can, and the team is working diligently to make that happen.
All right. Thanks for the caller. So when you add up the pieces of the business transformation plan that you gave in 3Q earnings, you get a broader range of $240 to $300 million in cost savings. What are the puts and takes that would put you on the low end or the high end of the range?
It's really execution. I mean, it's really comes down to executing. Some of these are harder than others, as you'd imagine, as Al mentioned, going from 12 different systems from where you make a quote to a customer to actually billing the customer. We have 12 systems in between that process, which are very old and clunky. So that's just hard work. It takes some time to change those out. And so the real balancing act is executing all of these things more or less in parallel, and you know, much like in life, some of them turn out to be a little better than you expected, and some of them turn out to be not as good as you expected, and so that's how the portfolio will play out. I mean, underneath those work streams, which we detailed for investors in our earnings call, I mean, there are 200 projects, right? There are 200 projects that we're working on. Some of them are obviously bigger than others, and every one of those projects has a project owner, a business plan, an investment required to do it, an interlock of what other people or what other organizations are required. So, you know, to make this change in a company, to increase your margins 1,300 basis points off a base of 22% is no small task. Okay, I can tell you I've worked in multiple companies in multiple industries, and it's no small task to make the magnitude of changes internally to get that level of margin improvement. And so you think about underneath that, you have 200 projects. Every one of those projects has to be mapped to, okay, I can't do, you know, item number X until Al has achieved item number Y. And so all of those things have to be mapped out and choreographed to execute all the margin. And so, as I said, and Al said, you know, some of them will go a little faster. Some of them may turn out to be a little bit more difficult than we anticipated. But to be very clear with investors, I mean, we're confident about our ability to meet the plan and the targets that we've set forth. And, you know, you should see that in our quarterly results as we move along. You see progress each and every quarter. Life is not a straight line. Life is never perfect. I'm sure occasionally we'll have a quarter that doesn't look like we made much progress. But across the trend line, you should see us moving our margins up as we continue to grow the top line as well, and you'll see, you know, good progress over the next 8 to 10 quarters as we execute the transformation.
And cost is a really big focus on the transformation. Could you talk a little bit to what's fixed versus variable in your cost base and kind of what is embedded in your cost of goods sold?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we think about our, you know, overall cost structure, and I think about, you know, things like the overall OPEX and our, you know, gross margins, you know, there are elements of the product portfolio and of the offering. And I'll use a couple of examples because I think they illustrate it. You know, in X number of states, we do computer vehicle registration to tag, title, and license your vehicle. That's a straight variable cost on that business. We do the same with the credit bureau business. Experian, Equifax, TU, you know, as a bureau gets run, there's a variable cost element of it. You know, in the advertising business, because people know that we're, you know, we have a digital asset, you know, that Google fees and whatnot are straight variable. You know, what we would expect to see, and I think we've talked about this when we launched our transformation plan, is that we would expect to see good leverage coming from the SG&A space, number one, and we would expect to see good leverage coming from some of the OPEX areas as we think about the programs that we're executing, particularly in terms of improving the implementation process and some of the items that Brian talked about on the service. And I think one of the messages that we really try to convey to both our employees as well as our clients is that, you know, the opportunity to improve our performance, both from a service and delivery perspective, in addition to moving the margins up, are not events that are one or the other. You know, we can do both because there's, you know, good opportunities to scale the business in a different manner than we do today. So, you know, we would expect to see, you know, good scale in the business, again, particularly in SG&A and in some of the areas of the operating expense as well.
When thinking about the opportunity to accelerate the transformation plan, I know that's been brought up a lot. What would the puts and takes be of a one-year versus a three-year plan?
Yeah, I guess, look, we have a three-year plan, so let's be clear on that. We have a three-year plan. Inside of the three-year plan, there's things that will happen each year. Some of them will get, you know, checked off earlier along the way. Some will take the full 3 years. But we have a three-year plan. We have a margin target of 35%, which is a 1,300 basis point improvement from where we started. We're executing against that. And, you know, you'll see the benefits of that each and every quarter.
So do you think there'd be any value in accelerating the plan, kind of the way some investors have suggested?
Look, there's nobody more incented to accelerate the components of the plan more than the management team, okay? So every day we come to work and we think about how we can do things, you know, faster. And that's one of my three cultural mantras is I call it need for speed. So every day we come to work and we think about what we can do faster, what we can do more of, how we can go further. So that's a consistent journey. But we've laid out a pretty comprehensive plan, and we're executing against that.
All right, fair. Thinking about pricing, how much room do you have in pricing of your products versus your peers?
You know, pricing is, I mean, I've told people this before, and I'm involved in a number of transactions personally. You know, the pricing is an area that, you know, we continue to look at. It's an area that we continue to, you know, fight with competitors in our space because there are multiple competitors that we compete with. You know, each and every single transaction, whether it be a layered application or whether it be a switch out if they choose to shop the DMS, becomes a competitive fight. And we, you know, very diligently look at all the elements of our portfolio and do our best to maximize lift that we can get from a pricing side. And we do it, you know, day in, day out. Across our $2 billion portfolio, we garner about 1% or so of price across the overall portfolio. And as we've exited or we're entering the magnitude of the transformation period, you know, that, you know, price element is more like a point and a half to 2 points in terms of lift. And it's brought about as a result of more of the discount band eliminations that we had and tightening of those controls and leveraging our pricing power in those areas where we can and so forth.
So can you talk about which areas where you have pricing power looking through the segments? What is it in Aarna versus
Sure.
Ari versus
Sure.
digital?
Sure. I mean, the international arena, we don't have as much of the pricing elasticity because a lot of those are contractual and tied to CPI. There isn't as much of opportunity that we see internationally on that. The digital business is highly competitive, as I think most in the group know. The subscription elements of the revenue stream, we do have some, you know, pricing power, and we take, you know, marginal price increases on websites and some SEO and ProCare services. You know, the bulk of the you know, pricing power that we do have is in the core business within North America, and not the whole portfolio can be price increased, clearly. There are certain elements of it that are mandated, and the computer vehicle registration example is one where it's mandated by the state. Bureaus, not so much. It's the subscription-based revenues that we can, you know, price increase, whether it be contractual or otherwise. So that's the area of the business where we have the elasticity.
And do you have any other further pockets of opportunity, such as the integrations opportunity?
Look, I would say there's opportunity for a lot of improvement in CDK, and you know, there's nothing that we're not taking a hard look at. I mean, the fact that we have 200 projects tells you, I think, that we're not leaving many stones unturned. There are no sacred cows in the company to look at or to approach. We just did a major reorganization, a major, you know, redesign, and you know, if there's opportunity there, I can assure you we're going to go get it. And you can look at my background and some of the things I've done in other companies and other industries. And investors should feel assured that if there's an opportunity there, we're going to go and try to get it.
I know it's still early days, but could you size the kind of lift that you're getting from the integrations opportunity?
No, I mean, look, we report our results quarterly. We laid out for you a number of work streams and what the dollar values are, and you know, we'll be having a quarterly call to talk about Q4 soon enough. So.
And embedded within the work streams that we've articulated are various levers that we pull with respect to price across the portfolio.
So I'll have one more question before I open up to the audience. So one of the big themes among the other DMS players at the NADA convention was this kind of greater focus on the upmarket, which is your traditional bread and butter. What do you view as your moat against these new entrants?
Well, I think that, you know, these are great, they're great customers. These I mean, the CDK made a great strategic decision many years ago, which was to really penetrate the bigger dealer groups. And those groups are getting bigger, right? And so that drags volume to us and market share to us very naturally. You know, those customers are clearly focused on service technology. And, of course, we have long-term contracts with them, but we have to earn their business every day, which we're very focused on doing. And so, you know, we just had a major win with the Hendrick Group, which is, I think, validation of our strategy and our approach. With these large dealer groups, and I think that, you know, as they grow, we help facilitate their growth, because if they buy 18 stores and they're not CDK stores, we jump through hoops to help them get those stores onto their system, because they're really important customers to us, and we know it's really important to them to get those new 18 stores onto their system. And so As they grow, we help facilitate their growth, and we grow with them. And so we're very happy with that strategy in that part of the market.
So using the Hendrick win as an example, what was your secret sauce behind that win?
Well, I think our team has been working on a relationship with Hendrick over a long time. These are really relationship businesses, and our team has been working on a relationship with Hendrick for many, many years. And I think, there's obviously a very big decision for someone of the magnitude of Hendrick to make, to come over to us. And I think our team, worked on it pretty hard for multiple years, quite frankly. And look, at the end of the day, it's our product suite and what we can bring that makes the difference. And fortunately for us, as a proof statement, they're coming over to us, and we'll take the next year or so to ramp them up.
All right. With that, we'll open up to Q&A. And as a reminder, there's also the annual portal that you can use for tablet questions.
Can you talk a little bit about product extension? What might be coming in the future beyond the focus on reorg?
Yeah, sure. So we have a pretty good position in the core DMS, call our market share low 40%. We had layered apps that basically attached to the DMS, and I think there's opportunities for us to grow our penetration levels around those as we move forward here in the future. So I see that areas like Service Edge, our inventory tools. I think we have good opportunity to grow our penetration around those layered apps.
And maybe connected store is another one that's coming, as you read about the digitization as well as the online experience mirroring the brick and mortar experience, embedding elements of the DMS into the website so that when folks are beginning their journey, they can do a lot of those transacting online so that to the penny, when they come in, the payment's the same. One of the worst things that can happen is you say online, your payment's $379, you come in the store and they say, oh, we were kidding, it's more like four and a quarter. So the tools that we've integrated into the website in pilot now enable that transaction to happen to the penny, which is very beneficial for the dealer.
So North America DMS sites have been down sequentially two of the last three quarters. Clearly, as investors, we like getting that margin lift from doing fewer installs. But how are you balancing revenue growth and wanting to still be a share gainer in your core business versus the cost of losing money on installs?
Yeah, I would view the sequential decline as really an anomaly, and don't be trending that out. I mean, we had a list of clients in Canada that had a relatively small package of integration into the OEMs, relatively low price point. So you'll see that we continue to still get a lift in the average revenue per site. So I wouldn't trend that one out necessarily. We're continuing to see good growth. The Hendrick example is one that I think we'll start to you know, see some of the lift over time with that. You know, do we lose business? Yeah, we lose business. It tends to be on the more the lower end of the market. But, you know, our focus is really to continue to gain new sites in all of our channels, including RE International as well as in the adjacency side. So I think it's more of an anomaly. And we'll still penetrate the base with layered apps, as was referenced to your left.
Just wondering, I guess we'll see in the next proxy, but how management incentives are structured to hit some of the targets around either 35% EBITDA margin or otherwise?
So the question is, how is management compensated around the 35% EBITDA target? So management is directly compensated tied to those 35% targets. The management team was awarded equity grants in September of last year with a certain structure built around that, the 35% targets. I joined the company in December, and my specific request was to have the same set of targets as the management team, because I want to ride with the management team and I want the management team to ride with me, and those targets are around the 35%.
Any other questions, or I'll continue? So, thinking about the saturation of the domestic market, the next leg of growth, and you mentioned this, will come from greater penetration of your layered apps. Where do you see the greatest attach rate opportunity?
So, I think we have a good product around inventory management. I think connected store, as Al mentioned, we have beta sites for that now at a number of dealerships, which is being very well received. So that, I think, is a good opportunity for us. I think our service products, I mean, I think there's a number of them, quite frankly. And as Al mentioned, when we look across our penetration of layered apps, they're not that high, quite frankly, and it's an opportunity for us to grow those, which will be one of our focuses over the coming years.
Could you size the penetration level? Is it 20%, 30%, 50%?
Largely sub. I mean, some of them are obviously there's a gamut. You know, some are in the 30s, some are in the single digits. So it's a real dispersion of penetration rates. And I think they can all move up. And that's got to be a focus of ours. We've got some product issues to work on that will help. We've got some sales structures to work on, which will help. But it's clearly an opportunity for us. It's clearly, especially with the penetration. I mean, we've done a very good land grab in the DMS space, and we're very embedded there with low 40% market share. And so, there's a vertical opportunity for us to grow the penetration around the embedded base we have.
And one of the real benefits of the reorg that Brian announced yesterday is really leveraging the digital capabilities in terms of a sales force with the DMS side, and you'd be surprised at how low a penetration we have, meaning we, CDK, of the digital assets within our core. And so it's, less than 30%. So there's tremendous overlap opportunities that we have, and with the combining of the sales organizations that was announced yesterday, we see that as a leverage point for us to really have a dealer that has our core coupled with the digital assets to have a real point of differentiation in the market. And that's really a focal point that we have in terms of the focus on sales.
There's still a lot of runway left. Shifting gears and thinking about the RE business, you have a much broader geographic scope than a lot of your peers. Could you talk to the global OEM contracts that keep you in certain geographies, or if there's any kind of value in having this broad geographic base?
So outside the United States, the OEMs tend to have much more influence over the dealer body and what dealer management system they use. So, for example, it's not abnormal for an OEM to mandate in a country, Spain or Portugal, pick whatever country you like, that every one of their dealers in that country would use that DMS. So we have a, you know, we have a very good product. We have good penetration in a number of countries with Mercedes-Benz, BMW, real marquee customers, Jaguar Land Rover. And so we're, you know, we think there's some good upside there. In the shorter term, in the next year or two, we're, there's a lot of embedded complexity in Europe as well. And, you know, we're consolidating operations there in Prague and back offices and doing a number of things of that nature. And so for the next year or two, we're growing margins there. We have a 25% EBITDA margin target for Europe, which is up from, you know, probably 15 or so in the last, you know, 2 years, and we're making good progress on that. So fundamentally, you know, we have a good product. We tend to follow the OEMs just because of the way the business works outside of the United States and Canada. But, you know, we think there's good upside there.
All right. Thank you. That's all the time we have left. Al, Brian, thank you for coming out.
Thank you so much.